Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Jason Trapp, Book 6, Black Eagle, by Jack Slater. Narrated by Terrence Aselford and performed by a full cast. The bar on Ulitsa Dekabristov in the Siberian city of Ust-Ilimsk had lived many lives. Concentric circles of motor oil on the grimy concrete floor spoke to a previous incarnation as an automobile repair shop. Faint, darkened outlines of units against the far walls told of years spent as a grocery store. And now it was a drinking establishment. Trapp pulled the door open, blasting a gust of icy wind into the space. He closed it and dusted the snow off his boots. He was wearing outdoor gear, brandless, colorless, drab, but warm enough to meet the 10-degree weather of the subarctic in April. The street of Ulitsa Dekabristov was a half mile from the brutalist Soviet office block that housed the Ministry of Internal Affairs of the Federation of Russia. The ministry was responsible for the Politsei, the feared Russian Federal Police Service. A number of Politsei officers were seated in the small establishment, mostly in small groups, their fur hats placed by their glasses on the table in front of them. There were a few lieutenants, younger men, who already sported the grizzled features chiseled into them by the cold and the dark of the northern region. A captain was reading the paper, and a fat major, distinguished by the single gold star over two red stripes on his dark blue epaulets, was seated near the beer taps. He still had his jacket on instead of draped over the back of his bar stool. A half-drunk beer glass was clutched in a liver-spotted hand, and two full shots of vodka sat a short distance away. Trapp walked toward him, lifting his pack off his shoulder and setting it by his side. He took a seat at the bar, but left a few stools between him and the major, who didn't look over. He studied him through his peripheral vision. The officer was even more corpulent up close than at a distance. Heavy, toad-like jowls hung over his collar. His nose was a luminous red, and not, Trapp suspected, from the cold.
Pivo, пожалуйста.
Trapp sat down, and the bartender furnished his request for a beer with neither smile nor comment. He merely stuck out his hand for payment. Trapp supplied the necessary rubles, and with the trade complete, he began to drink. The beer was a local lager, neither tasty, offensive, or memorable. Still, it went down surprisingly easy as the warmth began to return to Trapp's limbs. It wasn't so much the temperature outside that was hard to manage, but the wind, which found every crack in your clothing and punished them mercilessly. He didn't understand why anyone would choose to live this far north, where the mercury plunged far below zero and the days in winter lasted just a couple of hours. But they did choose to do that, and so he was here. The bar was barely decorated, save for two portraits on the wall. The larger one was stacked over the other and bore the image of the president of the Russian Federation, a man whom Trapp knew well. The other face belonged to the governor of Irkutskaya Oblast. The bartender approached him.
Another?
Trapp nodded and pushed the now empty glass back across the bar.
Da.
The trade went much like the last. The bartender wasn't a man of conversation, and Trapp appreciated that. He had a working understanding of Russian, if long forgotten, and this was by no means his first excursion into the country. But the crash language courses that often preceded a foreign operation that Langley greenlit usually focused on what the agency knew best, the cultured dialect and accents used by diplomats in Moscow. Not the thick, grunted indifference of the inhabitants of a place like Irkutsk. Still, Trapp thought as he steadily drank his way through the second glass of beer, the language was coming back to him. He'd been in country for almost a week now, making his way across the vast nation from Moscow to Siberia by plane, train, bus, and car. And unlike tonight, he'd spent as many hours as possible practicing. He wasn't quite a natural at languages, though he was intelligent and had a passably good ear, but he had persistence on his side, And the knowledge that a single slip-up could cost him his life was as good a motivator as any. Instead of talking, he listened. But the bartender was silent, and the police major beside him seemed mostly consumed by getting as drunk as possible as fast as he could. The other inhabitants of the establishment were somewhat noisier. The junior officers were engaged in a heated conversation about the relative merits of the various ice hockey teams Trapp learned were to compete at a tournament at Lake Baikal the coming month. He observed them lazily in the mirrored finish behind the bar.
They're shit. You know that.
Zayetsev's son is in net. You think they'll lose?
Forget about him.
How can they forget about him? You think anything else matters?
Quiet! I'm trying to think.
Trapp doubted that. He signaled for the bartender's attention. The man shuffled over to him, scowling.
What?
Vodka. A bottle.
The bartender shrugged and returned a moment later with a couple of small glasses and the requested liquor.
Just for you?
What does it matter to you?
Go to hell.
The barman turned away. He didn't seem particularly offended.
I'm already there.
Trapp reached for the chilled vodka and poured himself a strong measure. He lifted it to his lips and tossed it back in one without grimacing. In truth, it wasn't too bad. Vodka was one thing the Russians did well. He had to give them that. Though given how much they drank, that was kind of table stakes. Trapp poured another shot. Already the combination of liquor and fatigue was a potent mix in his veins. The police major turned toward him, resting his bulk on his right elbow.
Who are you?
The man reached for one of the vodka shots in front of him, by now many times refilled, and succeeded in spilling a few drops onto the wooden bar before it reached his mouth. Trapp stared studiously forward and pushed the empty shot glass from side to side across the wooden bar, listening to the rhythmic sound. The major was breathing heavily, clearly drunk. It was an off-putting, almost stomach-turning sound, or would have been if Trapp's gut wasn't already home to a seething pit of straight liquor. He felt the weight of the man's gaze on his skin.
You! I asked you a question.
What do you want? Can't you see I'm trying to drink?
The police major recoiled slightly, his befuddled, drunken features scrunching not so much in fright as surprise. He was clearly not a man who often found himself on the receiving end of a verbal broadside.
What the hell is wrong with you?
Nothing.
Trapp reached for the bottle and refilled his glass. He deliberately caused his hand to shake as he did so, spilling a few drops.
No need to be so rude.
The Russian looked meaningfully at the bottle in front of Trapp.
Why don't you make amends?
Trapp guzzled down the new shot of vodka. It caused a lightheadedness that combined with the alcohol already coursing through his veins.
What? You want my vodka now too?
Where are you from?
Trapp reached for the man's empty shot glass and filled it to the brim with the clear liquor. He refilled his own once again, then pushed the spare down the bar with a perfunctory nod.
Drink it, and leave me the hell alone.
The police officer reached for the glass with a face like thunder, almost overbalancing as he did so. Yet he pulled the glass toward him with the perfect balance of a practiced drunk, not spilling a drop.
You should work on your manners.
I gave you a drink, didn't I?
Trapp tipped back another shot. By now, his own drunkenness was far from just an act. His stomach was rolling with over a third of a bottle of vodka, never mind the two beers. It wasn't so much the volume of alcohol as the speed with which he had imbibed it, and on an empty stomach, no less.
I don't recognize you. Where have you come from?
Trapp refilled his drink.
Who says I have to speak to you, old man?
Old!
The Russian's voice boomed across the bar, momentarily silencing his junior colleagues who looked toward the commotion.
You have a lot of nerve.
The assorted police were now engrossed by the growing ruckus, all talk of women and ice hockey temporarily forgotten. The few civilian customers were beginning to look a little uneasy, though nobody attempted to leave. Trapp reached for the bottle again, poured yet another shot of vodka, lifted it to his lips.
Say something!
Here.
Trapp sprawled across the bar as he reached for the major's empty glass to refill it.
I told you once already, drink that and leave me alone.
I don't want your vodka.
The Major understood that his colleague's eyes were upon him.
That's not what you said a moment ago.
The Major stood, his bar stool scraping against the concrete floor.
Say that to my face, quick.
Atibes Atmenia.
The Major unclipped his holster.
Look at me, before I have you arrested.
Trapp reached for the vodka bottle. He stood up, pushing his own bar stool back. Still, he did not give the Russian his attention. Instead, he gripped the bar until his knuckles turned white. His beard, 2 weeks old, began to itch even through the fog of his drunkenness. Finally, he turned and brandished the half-empty bottle in front of the fat major's eyes.
You want this?
Put that down.
If it wasn't for a steadying hand of his own against the bar, Trapp suspected he would be swaying.
Or what? You shoot me? When was the last time you checked out on that thing? I bet you couldn't hit a barn door at 5 paces, you impotent fuck.
The Major's face went beet red, starting at the already rosy nose and glowing outward like a volcano erupting.
Say that again.
Do you want this?
Trapp shook the bottle at the man. The cap was a little unscrewed and a few droplets sloshed out as he shook it.
Come and get it.
As the Major started to draw his weapon, Trapp smashed the vodka bottle against the bar, and the crack of shattering glass seemed to stun the entire room into paralysis. The Russian's eyes went wide as he saw the jagged weapon now in Trapp's hands.
Not so brave now, are you, you drunk?
Trapp took a couple of steps forward. The Russian retreated. Trapp waved the bottle around madly and rushed the Major, who tripped and fell backward against the concrete floor with an almighty crash. As he went down, Trapp tossed his makeshift weapon aside and straddled the fallen police officer, laying into him with a few heavy yet measured blows. Still, they stole the wind from the Major's gut, and he started to choke. Trapp punched him once in the side for good measure, and what little resistance the man had posed instantly faded. Finally, the bar seemed to react. A lieutenant, a rat-like man, rushed him, and Trapp moved slowly, reactions truly numbed by the alcohol. He scrambled backward, tripping over the Major's limp body and hit the deck, nicking his outstretched hand on a shard of glass and drawing blood.
Balls.
The lieutenant's first blow, a right hook, was telegraphed a million miles off, even in Trapp's present condition. He threw up an arm to defend himself against it and lashed out with a strike of his own into the officer's torso. The impact drove the glass deeper into Trapp's palm. Winded, the rat stumbled back, but angrily gestured his compatriots onward. Trapp struggled to his feet, but too late. The next hit came from a brute of a man, with the build of a lumberjack and the face of a boxer. It drove the oxygen from Trapp's lungs. The next strike dropped him back to the ground. His bloodied hand left a streak on the floor. Then they all started kicking. Trapp woke in a cold concrete cell that might easily have dated back to the days of Stalin. It was windowless and had the damp, still feel of a place deep below ground. The walls were painted a faded hospital green, clinical. Perhaps that was the intention. Despite himself, he shivered. This was the kind of place from which people never left. Purgatory.
Status report? Where are you? How are you?
The where was most likely the dungeons of the Interior Ministry building, just a few hundred yards from the bar on Ulitsa Dekabristov. The cell itself was small, perhaps 10 feet long and 5 feet wide. There was barely space for a small metal cot with no mattress, only the slats on which he now lay. Not yet willing to trust his body, he explored the frame with his fingers. The slats were welded to it, and he suspected that it was soldered to the floor of the cell. The sound bounced off the cell's hard walls, and without any soft furnishings to dull its edge, it ricocheted back into Trapp's hungover mind, causing him to wince and reminding him of how he was doing. He placed his palms over his face.
Never again.
For now, at least, never again was likely, and from now on he would speak Russian. The police weren't going to let him get away with what he'd done in that bar. They would throw the book at him. Trap turned his head and found himself staring at a steel toilet. It was no more than 18 inches from his face, and the smell that rose from it indicated that it hadn't been cleaned in a long while. Perhaps the smell itself, on another day or at a time when he felt less fragile, wouldn't have been sufficient to provoke what happened. He rolled desperately off the side of the metal cot as a wave of magma rose from deep within him. He landed on his hands and knees, almost knocking himself out on the toilet's steel rim. He clutched it like a shipwrecked sailor, heedless of the filth that coated it. Trap's stomach spasmed and clenched, and the liquid supper he'd consumed the previous evening rose from within him. It had an acidic, foul stink that singed the tender flesh of his nostrils and burned the back of his throat. After perhaps 5, maybe 10 minutes of this pathetic desperation, Trap finally sank back against the metal cot. Only now was he able to focus on the damage inflicted on his body by the police officers the day before. He was still wearing the t-shirt and pants that he'd had on when they apprehended him, though the former was now speckled with vomit and blood. The rest of his possessions, his pack, coat, belt, wallet, everything, were gone. He used the cot's frame to pull himself halfway up, then heaved himself the rest of the way. His right thigh cried out in pain, and he undid his fly as he leaned against the wall for support. His pants, a size too large and already the victim of several days' hard traveling, fell to his calves. He pushed his boxer shorts to one side and let his eyes drop.
Damn it.
He probed the enormous purple bruise that coated the upper half of his leg, spidering all the way up to his hip. He wasn't someone who bruised easily, which meant they must have kicked him hard. He didn't even remember. There was a small wash basin next to the toilet, and he shuffled toward it, his pants still around his ankles. He turned the faucet and grimaced at the flow of water that trickled out, which was feeble, ice cold, and brown with rust. Trap washed his hands first, scything through the grime, then shaking the droplets of filth onto the side of the basin. He dropped his face to it and cleaned what he discovered to be a split lip and a boxer's ear, both tangled and matted with blood. The injury to his lip had dripped and clotted onto his new beard. He pulled the t-shirt over his head, wincing as a particularly unpleasant contusion on his torso announced its presence.
Maybe a broken rib. Hopefully just bruised.
He dropped the t-shirt, then rolled his neck, gingerly testing one leg after another, then windmilling his arms, clenching his fists, and touching his toes. The pants still loitered around his ankles. Either pulling them back up or stepping out seemed to bridge too far at the present time. Trap concluded that he was hurt, but not seriously injured. Unless he had any internal bleeding that might still spell his doom, he was okay. It would take a week or two to fully recover, and even then, strenuous activity would probably cause him to wince. But that was as good as he might have expected. Footsteps sounded in the hallway outside. This place was real old school, that was for sure. He doubted there were any cameras. They could do anything to him down here, and no one would blink an eye. When the cell's thick steel door swung open, a mean-looking guard with a linebacker build emerged from behind it, brandishing a thick black baton. He didn't say a word, but the look on his face was clear enough. Trap backed away from the entrance, allowing a somewhat fearful expression to crawl across his features. The guard stepped inside, and the police major from the bar the night before entered the cell. He wasn't wearing his jacket, and his white uniform shirt barely contained his gut. He looked much as he had done the previous night, except for the makings of a pretty decent black eye on the left-hand side. His cheek was swollen, drooping like a toad's jowls below his chin. He leered at Trap.
Not so arrogant now, are you?
Trap played dumb.
Who are you?
The question seemed to take some of the wind out of the major's sails, though not for long. The man looked his prisoner up and down, drinking in the full details of his near nakedness and general humiliation. It took him a good 20 seconds to calm back down.
You don't remember?
What did you thugs do to me? How did I get here?
Are you retarded? Did someone hit you on the head as a little boy?
That's no business of yours. Where are my things?
The officer turned back to the guard who had opened the cell door with a look on his face that said, "Do you believe this guy?" He received an indifferent shrug, then turned back.
You look like shit.
I feel like shit. You didn't answer my question.
You really don't remember? You assaulted me, and half a dozen other police officers. Do you know the penalty for that?
What proof do you have?
In reply, the man pointed at his swollen eye.
Does this jog your memory?
I would have hit you harder than that.
Apparently not. You're going away for a long time, you know that?
Might as well make it count.
Trap took a step backward.
What did you say?
Trap grinned. He formed his right knuckles into a fist and twisted his aching torso, catching the man in the jaw.
I said, I might as well make it count.
Yavoriv Combat Training Center, Lviv Oblast, Ukraine. Staff Sergeant Nelson Packer snapped to attention as Lieutenant Graf entered the gently billowing olive-green Ukrainian army tent. The rest of his squad followed suit. They were in various states of undress, though to their squad leader's relief, they were at least all wearing their woodland camo pants. The young officer gave them a tired wave of his hand.
At ease. Come with me, Sergeant. There's a few guys I need you to meet.
Yes, sir.
Packer followed the lieutenant back out through the low overhanging entrance to the tent. Patches of dirty snow still lingered in places on the ground, and there was a bitter chill to the air as the last clutches of winter refused to give up their grasp. It was almost enough to make a man hanker for the heat of summer back home, and Nelson never thought he would miss the humidity of Atlanta, Georgia.
What's this about, Lieutenant?
They passed the motor pool, which catered to the military training base in the west of the country that housed the joint multinational training group, Ukraine. An old ex-Soviet self-propelled howitzer roared into life as a mechanic worked on it. An eruption of thick black diesel smoke suddenly belched from the vehicle's exhaust. The mechanic in question was left coughing for dear life and clutching his chest as his comrades nearby doubled over with laughter. Packer winced as the scene passed out of sight. The guy would be hacking that shit up for weeks. Maybe he would see the funny side of it in the small window between the wheezing stopping and before he inevitably developed black lung. The mechanics here were doing God's work as far as he was concerned, coaxing life out of machinery that ought to have ended up on the scrap heap decades earlier. Some of the tanks the Ukrainians trained their people on must have come out of some Moscow armament factory in the mid-60s, and it was a miracle that they still ran at all.
I understand you and your men are looking forward to a week of leave following tomorrow's graduation ceremony.
That is correct, sir.
Well, not anymore, it isn't. Don't worry, I'll make it up to your boys, and you, of course, but our Ukrainian friends asked someone on high for a favor, and the shit trickled down until it reached my desk.
And you kicked it on to me, huh, sir?
That's how the world turns, Sergeant.
Packer didn't mind, not really. The lieutenant was a good officer, which in his book meant he did his fair share of the paperwork the army bureaucracy demanded and let the men underneath him do what they did best. And the officer was right. If Packer had wanted an employer to respect his vacation days, he wouldn't have re-upped.
Yes, sir.
Their destination was a temporary barracks tent, much like the one they'd just departed. The signs on the base were in English as well as Ukrainian, which was a blessing, as the layout had about as much personality as the sergeant's first wife. As he ducked his head inside, Packer was hit by a thick wall of stale cigarette smoke. It reminded him of the smell of the Vegas chapel in which he'd married the wife in question, which, handily enough, had helped arrange the annulment before he hopped on the shuttle back to Atlanta at the end of the week. As he blinked away the memory, the interior came into view. A dozen or so Ukrainians, because there was no mistaking their nationality, were either slumped on bunks or playing cards on top of an upturned green ammunition crate. A handle of local vodka sat proudly alongside the cards, the red screw top nowhere to be seen. It was a long way past half empty. Nobody jumped to attention as either he or the lieutenant entered. That didn't surprise Packer. The local soldiers he'd helped train over the past few months had been generally willing to learn and had taken quickly to American standards of discipline, but sure hadn't come to it naturally. Bleary eyes turned to face Graf, some seeming to realize for the first time that anyone had entered the sanctum. Two men rose to their feet, slowly.
I'm looking for Lieutenant Timothy Ponomarenko.
For a moment there was silence, accented by the sound of a soldier sparking a fresh cigarette. The man was bald, through the march of time rather than choice, except at the sides. His belly hung over his belt, and his forearm was enveloped by a tattoo of a coiled snake. His gut engorged with air as he sucked in the first breath of his smoke.
Surely that can't be him.
Packer struggled to keep his face impassive. These men were not soldiers. They were detritus, or at least that was the persona they had chosen to adopt. His eye was attracted to the movement of a whippet-like man rising to his feet. His hair was dark and cut short everywhere but about his neck, where it hung in a mullet.
Timothy, not Timothy.
It sounded the same to Packer's untrained ear.
Understood, Lieutenant.
Graf wisely chose to continue with the man's rank rather than his name as he extended his hand.
I'm Lieutenant Hank Graf. This is Sergeant Nelson Packer. He will be helping train your boys on the new equipment.
Reading the officer's tone, Packer stepped forward and hesitated only a second before rendering the disheveled Ukrainian lieutenant a crisp salute.
Pleasure to make your acquaintance, sir.
Ponomarenko squinted back for a moment longer than was entirely polite, during which time it became obvious that his eyes were red-rimmed with either exhaustion or alcohol, or both.
And you, Sergeant?
Well, Lieutenant, I'll leave you all to get acquainted. If you have any trouble, you know where to find me.
The Ukrainian's demeanor certainly wasn't lost on Graf. The man was done with this meeting, and not too happy that someone in his chain of command had railroaded him into it. Graf turned to leave, and Packer nodded to keep things polite as he followed the American officer out of the tent, lengthening his stride to keep up. Packer waited until they were both clear of the tent.
Sir, is it okay if I speak with you freely?
What is it, Packer?
I'm not one to judge, Lieutenant, but who exactly are these guys? I'm trying real hard to watch my tongue here, but the men I just saw are a rabble. A javelin costs, what, $100,000 a pop? And the Ukrainians want to hand them over to this mob?
The lieutenant glanced back at the tent they just exited before replying. If anything, his voice dropped a couple of decibels.
You'll find no argument here, Sergeant. That said, I know they don't look like much, but I think you'll be surprised what they're capable of.
Why is that, sir?
Graf executed another shifty glance to ensure that they weren't being overheard.
They're an irregular unit. At least they used to be, before the Ukrainians rolled them into their National Guard. Most of them signed up after the Russians invaded the Donbas region back in 2014. They've seen combat like you wouldn't believe. First World War trench warfare shit. No body armor, mostly with hunting rifles, shotguns, and eventually weapons they'd taken off the bodies of the men they killed.
Packer's eyebrows rose with newfound respect. It didn't quite square with the initial impression he'd gained of the Ukrainians, but the more he thought it over, the more it made sense. Lieutenant Ponomarenko's men had a real Special Forces outlaw vibe to them, a fact that was clearly related to their unit being birthed outside of a regular military structure.
I read about that before we shipped out, but I thought those irregular units were put in the reserve after the Ukrainian army got up to speed. After all, that's why we're here, isn't it, sir?
You didn't hear this from me, Sergeant. But I heard rumors that the Russians and the separatists in the east are starting to nibble at the front line. They killed a few Ukrainian regulars last week. The guys you just met are a little more deniable, if you catch my drift. Like I said, Packer, that's between us. You just focus on getting them as proficient as you can.
You got it, Lieutenant.
The worried expression on Packer's face apparently spoke volumes. Graf hiked an eyebrow.
Something on your mind, soldier?
Sir, if you don't mind me saying, Lieutenant Ponomarenko seems a little recalcitrant. Just so I'm clear, what are my rules of engagement?
Like I said, Sergeant, you concentrate on getting them ready for the fight the way you know best. Be firm, but professional. I'll handle any blowback.
Packer's shoulders unknotted just a little.
Thank you, Lieutenant.
Packer lingered a few moments longer after Graf departed, wondering how he was going to play this. He had been posted here for several months and had put several Ukrainian regular infantry units through their paces, familiarizing them with NATO communication protocols and military tactics. Most had been eager to learn, if a little rough around the edges, in comparison with the units he was used to back home. These irregulars, though, were something else. Still, he had a job to do, and moaning about it wouldn't get him anywhere. As hard as he tried, it never did. Returning to the tent, he shouldered his way through the open flaps and walked right up to the Ukrainian officer.
Lieutenant, do your men speak English?
I do. My men understand some. They watch English movies and The Office.
Packer concealed his surprise at the admission, though it took considerable effort.
You like Jim Halpert, huh? I watched a few episodes on the plane over.
Big tuna.
Big tuna.
Packer racked his brain as he tried to remember which episode the Ukrainian was referring to. At least he'd gotten the guy talking. That was a kind of breakthrough, wasn't it? He pressed his advantage, not knowing how long it would last.
You mind if I take your men out for some PT?
PT?
Ponomarenko's face scrunched up.
What is PT?
Physical training. I want to take them out running. You are more than welcome to join us, of course, Lieutenant.
The Ukrainian officer said nothing for a few seconds.
Running? I don't run.
That explains a lot.
Packer did his best to remain impassive. It wasn't his place to risk a diplomatic demarche as a result of dressing down a foreign officer. But more importantly, that course of action wouldn't get him anywhere. He might not like it, and he sure didn't expect that these guys would shape up and get anywhere close to being ready for battle, but he had his orders.
What about your men? You mind if I take them out?
Do as you wish.
Ponomarenko pointed out each of his men in turn, though between the unfamiliar names and his thick accent, Packer only caught one, Stanislav Chernyak, the guy with the beer belly, mainlining nicotine on his way to an early grave. He committed the name to memory.
Everyone outside in 2 minutes.
Most of Ponomarenko's irregulars looked to their officer for confirmation. The Ukrainian paused for just a second before he gave his assent, which Packer read as an implicit reminder about who was really in charge.
It's your funeral, guys.
Packer exited the tent. His own drill instructors had always repeated the mantra, train hard, fight easy. But these guys seemed to have it the exact wrong way around. It took at least twice the time he'd allotted before the Ukrainians were gathered outside the tent. In the daylight, he saw that the unit resembled the aftermath of a supermarket sweep at a military surplus store. True to form, Chernyak was puffing on a fresh cigarette.
Time to put that out, buddy.
Packer made eye contact with the man. Chernyak pretended not to understand and took another drag. Packer shrugged, knowing that there was nothing he could do to change the man's mind. And besides, his punishment would come. He jerked his head toward one of the military camp's internal roads. It was paved, but in quintessentially local style, riddled with potholes and loose gravel.
Let's go!
He set off at an easy pace, which he would expect even a raw recruit on her first day at boot camp to match. It would be a stretch to even describe it as jogging. Still, the last thing he needed was for one of these guys to blow an Achilles in the first 5 minutes, and since they mostly looked like they'd spent the last few years in a gaming chair staring goggle-eyed at a screen instead of humping a ruck up and down hillsides, he was happy to play it safe. Packer stole a glance over his shoulder and was gratified to see that so far, at least, each of his new charges was managing to keep up. They were strung out in a messy line rather than the neat formation he would have preferred, but he was confident neither in his language skills nor their fitness being sufficient to make it so.
Let's pick it up a little.
You could officially call this a jog, he decided as he sped up the pace steadily over the next 5 minutes. He was grateful as the exercise raised his heartbeat, as a brisk breeze had whipped up and was stinging his cheeks.
How we feeling?
The only response he got was an outbreak of strained coughing, with one set of pipes particularly prominent. He guessed they belonged to Chernyak, since it sounded like whoever was responsible was hacking up most of their left lung. He grinned with the perverse delight of a drill sergeant before a 4 a.m. wake-up call. Packer ran them for a little under half an hour, looping through the base's relatively diminutive main section, a square of brutalist concrete buildings, and around the much larger tent city that had cropped up to house the thousands of troops who rotated through on training exercises every quarter. twice, he ran past their starting point to raise false hope before dashing it against the rocks of continued exertion. Periodic glances over his shoulder soon told him that the unit was just about ready to collapse. Strained pink cheeks and hunched over running gaits added to the coughs, curses, and a high-pitched background wheeze.
Time to call it a day.
He wasn't impressed by the unit's physical condition, but he was gratified that they had enough grit to keep pumping their feet. The unit's tent came into view in the distance, about 100 yards away now.
One last push. I'll buy the winner a beer. How's that?
He grinned, wondering if any of them understood a damn word that he was saying. To Packer's surprise, when he finally came to a halt, Chernyak was only a couple of yards behind him. The Ukrainian's face was beet red, and he looked to be on the verge of a cardiac event. But the big guy was deceptively quick. He came to a stop and jutted out his chin with the arrogance of a mating peacock, though he couldn't conceal the redness in his cheeks.
That wasn't so bad, was it?
For Packer, it had been little more than a warm-up.
Screw you.
Chernyak hunched over and placed his palms on his thighs for support. He greedily sucked oxygen into his lungs, though the effort clearly required outsized exertion. After a few moments, he started patting his pockets. Packer suddenly realized what the man was doing.
You've got to be kidding me.
Chernyak opened the squashed cigarette box, extracted the last of his smokes, then searched for his lighter as he placed it between his lips. Around him, the remaining members of his unit straggled in. They were mostly men with far more athletic physiques than the big Ukrainian, and much less grit. He coaxed an ember into life at the end of the cigarette, all while Packer watched.
You know something, American? I decided the Russians aren't so bad after all.
Why is that?
They just tried to kill us, and they don't make us fucking run.
You'll thank me when they start shooting.
Chernyak burned through the remainder of the cigarette, then extinguished it under the heel of his boot.
You think I'm scared of those savages? I've never run from them.
I believe it.
Packer remembered what Lieutenant Graf had said. These guys were veterans and combat troops to match. Besides, it was obvious from the way that Chernyak carried himself. He decided that he wouldn't want to be the Russian that first stormed into the man's trench. As the last of the bedraggled unit stumbled to a halt, Chernyak met Packer's eye.
Don't forget my beer.
I wouldn't dream of it.
They at least found Trapp fresh clothes for the court hearing, though he suspected that nobody would make a spot for him on a catwalk. A pair of guards had placed a thick leather belt around his waist and shackled both his hands and his feet to it, so that he was forced to take half-shuffling steps to walk. Only two other prisoners made the journey with him in the back of the paddy wagon. One was a skinhead, and when his jacket pulled up from his wrists, the tattoos that no doubt covered his entire body revealed themselves. They had the semi-faded, indistinct appearance of art inked behind bars. Trapp suspected that he'd spent most of his life in the care of the state one way or another. He was squat and powerful, with the physique of a steel dumpster. The other was a more timid kind of guy entirely. He was white with fear and repeated an inaudible mantra over and over. What it was wasn't exactly clear, but it seemed to calm him for a time. The courthouse was only a few blocks from the holding cells and was strangely peaceful. The previous day's snowstorm had faded, and the city was coated in a fresh layer of snow, not yet turned into a gray melted slush or pushed aside by snowplows. They arrived, and a guard hauled them from the vehicle into the courthouse. It was an old Soviet structure with two flags flapping overhead, the red, white, and blue of the Russian Federation and the altogether more sinister design that belonged to the Irkutsk Oblast, a stylized black tiger with a dead animal in its mouth.
Comforting.
Dumpster guy was taken before the judge first. Trapp was left for about an hour in a fresh holding area before the quiet prisoner, too, was summoned for his hearing. As the guard pulled him out for his court appearance, he looked back at Trapp as if for support. Trapp simply shrugged.
What do you expect me to do about it?
Outside of the rusted cell bars, a wall clock slowly counted through the hours. It was a little before 10 in the morning when the guards returned with the skinhead, who they frog-marched past to a separate holding cell as he wore a grimace of acceptance. Trap was left alone, surrounded by the disconcerting stench of neglect.
Hey, I'm hungry!
His cries merely echoed into the expanse of a seemingly abandoned building. He turned around and slumped back onto the hard wooden bench that was the cell's only furniture. The food in the prison had been almost inedible, but now that little seemed better than nothing at all. It was a little after 2 p.m. when the guards came for him. They allowed him to walk under his own power, but looked as if they were waiting for any excuse to use the batons strapped to their belts. No doubt they'd heard what he'd done to their colleagues. This time, his course already set, Trap didn't push his luck. The second beating had been, if anything, more intense than the first. He'd managed to shield his head under the frame of the cot as his prison guard rained down blows on him, but that was about the only silver lining. His body was marked with a dozen more bruises, each deeper in color than the last. Every step was agony. They pushed him into the courtroom. It was small, with only space for about a dozen or so onlookers, though there were none in attendance. Only a male prosecutor, a female judge in dark robes and short blonde hair that was cut a little above her shoulders, and a third guard standing post near the door. He was ushered into a glass box, and it closed behind him. The prosecutor didn't look up from his notes. He had thinning gray hair and a pair of horn-rimmed spectacles perched about halfway down a slender nose.
Prisoner will state his name.
Trap leaned toward a microphone attached to the glass wall of his new prison.
Kolya.
It was a name he liked, and it was the same on the passport with which he'd traveled into Russia, in case anyone cared to search that far back. The document itself was long destroyed.
Family name?
I don't remember.
The prosecutor glanced up, actually looking somewhat surprised.
What do you mean you don't remember? It's a basic question.
I mean what I said. I don't remember.
Then where are you from?
I don't remember.
Are you idiot?
The major asked me that.
Trap glanced around the courtroom. It was a drab little place in a drab little city. The customary portraits of President Muroff and the local governor, Maxim Zayetsev, hung side by side behind the judge.
And your answer?
I don't know what you want me to say. My name is Kolya. I don't remember where I'm from. Does it matter?
The prosecutor glanced up at the judge.
I suppose not.
The judge gestured as though she agreed. She was well-fed with rosy cheeks and leaned back into a heavy leather chair with almost complete indifference. Trap wondered whether she really had any power or whether she jumped to someone else's tune.
You understand the charges?
I have an idea.
7 counts of assaulting an officer of the law, 1 of resisting arrest, 1 of public drunkenness.
That prig was just as drunk as me.
The prosecutor looked up at the judge.
The state seeks 9 years, Your Honor.
Hey, don't I get a lawyer?
Despite his pounding against the little cell's glass walls, both the judge and prosecutor ignored him as though he simply wasn't there. The prosecutor shuffled through his notes as if he was searching for an important detail rather than simply going through the motions. Trap ceased his one-man protest, recognizing it for the fruitless act it was. He leaned back against the glass wall of his cage, wincing as the material made contact with tender flesh. As the gray-haired prosecutor deliberated over his answer, the judge yawned, opening up a mouthful of coffee-yellowed teeth and dark splotches that served as tombstones for fillings. She scratched her chin but didn't cover her mouth. Trap winced at the sight, thankful for his present imprisonment inside the glass box. He could almost smell her from here. The judge looked up.
Prisoner Kolya, do you have anything to say in your defense?
He shook his head, crossing his arms and adopting a pose of surly defiance. He needed to speak as sparsely as possible. The last thing he needed was to be deported. They must already suspect that he was not Russian, though it hadn't seemed to bother them so far. Still, there was always a chance. She squinted at him, clearly baffled by his behavior.
You understand the consequences of failing to cooperate with the court?
He nodded. The judge shrugged and appeared to reach the conclusion that her time could be better spent somewhere other than trying to talk a recalcitrant half-wit out of a prison sentence that in truth he wholly deserved. She reached for her gavel, then paused, hand frozen in midair. Trapp held his breath. She beckoned to the prosecutor, who quickly yielded a piece of paper, which the woman consulted, then returned to him. He watched the whole charade unfold without saying a word. At last, the judge picked up the gavel and rapped it once against her bench.
In the absence of a defense, and persuaded by the incontrovertible evidence of your behavior, I find in favor of the state. You will serve 9 years of labor in Camp IK-29.
The prison transport van was a rickety thing, though Trapp quickly learned that it was entirely impregnable. It fit well in the long Russian tradition of not much caring how things look so long as they work. The back of the van had space for 8 cages. They were constructed out of steel and painted gray. One of them was full of cardboard boxes, mostly food and other supplies. The remaining 7 were functional. Trapp was locked into one of the farthest from the door and left alone for about 5 minutes before the guards returned. He used the time to explore his new home, which was matchbox-sized and contained only a metal bench upon which he could sit. There were no further concessions to either comfort or basic human dignity. A narrow viewing slit was cut into the vehicle's chassis, allowing him about a 6-inch view of the fenced courtyard of the Interior Ministry building. The window itself was made of darkened glass, which made it difficult to determine whether the snow outside was filthy or whether it was just an optical illusion. Footsteps crunching on the snow outside signaled the return of his jailers. Neither of them paid him any attention, as one puffed away on a cigarette dangling lazily from his lips. Between 2 of the guards was the shackled figure of the powerful yet diminutive skinhead from the courthouse the day before. Like Trapp, he too was now dressed in a prison uniform all cut from a cloth that was somewhere between black and dark brown, and with reflective strips sewn onto the chest area. He was shackled, but the chains hung loose, allowing him to walk freely. Neither of the guards looked concerned that he might run, and Trapp judged from his bearing that this was not his first experience of this journey. They unshackled him, put him in one of the cages opposite Trapp, then gave both prisoners a little food and water for the journey. Surprisingly, after Dumpster Guy was secure, the van's rear doors swung closed without the further addition of the timid man from the day before. Perhaps he had been found innocent, or more likely, he knew the judge's price. The engine was either poorly maintained or domestically produced, or probably both, and spat out thick clouds of smog at the slightest provocation, the stink of which found its way into the poorly insulated cargo compartment with startling ease. At first, it irritated Trapp's throat and lungs, but before long he'd grown used to it. It was no worse than burn barrels in the Iraqi desert. The roads in Ust-Ilimsk were nothing to write home about, but they were positively futuristic in comparison with those that lay around the city's limits. Whether it was the effects of a harsh winter on the local infrastructure or just decades, centuries even, of underinvestment in the region, Trapp didn't know. But the end result was the same, more potholes than asphalt. For the 1,000th time in just the first hour, the truck hit one such obstacle and bounced Trapp from one side of his cage to the other. His body, already fragile from the ministrations of the Polizei in the days prior, got another tenderizing.
What's your name?
Trapp ignored the skinhead's question.
Listen, friend, this is going to be a long journey. We may as well talk to each other.
A wide smile split the skinhead's face and made him look about 10 years younger than he otherwise seemed.
I am Anton.
Kolya. I don't talk much.
Where are you from, Kolya? I don't recognize your accent. You're not from here.
It was a statement, not a question.
Here and there.
Trapp watched Anton lower himself to the floor and wedge his body between the metal bench and one of the cage's walls. It stopped him from being thrown so violently around. Trapp copied it, though with less success. He had height on his Russian counterpart, but not mass.
So you don't talk much. That's fine. Probably a good idea where we're going. They've given me 2 more years. You?
9.
Whew, shit. They really wanted you, huh? What did you do?
A genuine smile crossed Trapp's face as he relived the memory of punching the fat Russian police officer. He kept his answers short and sweet so as not to test his vocabulary beyond its present limit.
Hit the cop.
That was you?
Was he a friend of yours?
Major Stepanov is an asshole. He deserved it, no doubt about that. But 9 years is a long time. Was it worth it?
I guess we'll find out.